VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk on VCY America. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're a regular listener to this program, you know that we've conducted numerous programs here on Crosstalk with medical and other professionals pertaining to COVID. We've had many news stories here on this program dealing with the matter of COVID, the shot, the mandates, even hospital protocols. We've heard testimony from a press conference from Senator Ron Johnson of those who have been injured by the shot, or testimony from those who lost a loved one. But today you're going to hear from another perspective. Today you're going to hear from a father whose 19-year-old daughter with Down syndrome tested positive for COVID, was hospitalized and treated following the protocols that are being carried out in facilities across the nation. The daughter's name is Grace. She was ushered into eternity 12 weeks ago today, October 13th, 2021. The story is shocking. It's alarming. But we want you to hear it firsthand. And with us today, we have in studio Grace's father, Scott Scherer. Scott, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Scott, first of all, our condolences to you, your wife, your daughter as well, in the loss of Grace. This has been a challenging time for you all, but we want to give you this platform to tell Grace's story here today, because there are so many families that are going through issues. A loved one they are seeing hospitalized with COVID and some of the protocols that are taken. And just want to give you opportunity to share firsthand the things that you've experienced. And I'd like you to begin just by telling us a little bit about Grace herself. She was born with Down syndrome?
Correct. Yeah, so Grace was born September 22nd, 2002. We didn't know that she had Down syndrome until she was born, and it was a beautiful surprise. We had decided to have another child, and my wife and I were both 39, so it was something that most people at our age don't do, but we thought if God wants it, He's going to allow it, and He did, and He gave us a beautiful girl. Hmm.
Grace is one that you've described as having, at her very core, was a love for the Lord. Tell us about that love for the Lord.
So I would say that Grace was like having an angel in your house all the time. She had a love for Jesus that I have never come close to. It was wonderful. She had I shared with you, Jim, before we got on the air, that she called me Earthly Dad. And so she had a sense of things that it's unbelievable what child calls their dad Earthly Dad, and mm-hmm. She did it on her own. It was a wonderful adventure to live with an angel amongst us. And yeah. There's lots of things I want to share about her in addition, if I can just have another minute. Mm-hmm. She was pretty high functioning. You know, most people don't necessarily have a Downs person in their life, but there's a wide range. Grace played violin. She danced. She drove. She didn't have a license yet, so just Dad would sneak her driving. She was fun-loving. She had a great sense of humor. Everybody that knew Grace had quite a following. I was just known as Grace's dad. But
Grace is one that won the friendship of many people.
Yes, she did. One of the girls in her class, we homeschooled Grace, but she went to a co-op every Thursday. And right before Christmas, one of the girls in her class wrote to Cindy and I. And I'm just going to read what she wrote, because it's hard to grasp. She wrote, "Dear Sharers, lots of things were harder for her than others, but she didn't show it. She did everything to the best of her abilities, and a lot of times that meant bringing in extra papers of information for everyone in the class at step. I would look at her and say, if she could do these extras, I can at least get my homework done. I would go home from step and have all these plans, and then Thursday would come, and I would not even have all my homework done. Then I would see Grace, and I would try again. But it rarely ever happened. But seeing Grace kept me trying. I have never shared this with anyone before, but if someone were to ask me who I wanted to be when I grow up, I would say Grace. She was the best combo of kind, fun, joyful, and focused when she needed to be.
Wow. She was loved by many and certainly had a special relationship with you and your wife as well.
Yes, she did.
In order to get the story out today, there's much we could talk about Grace's life, but I want us to propel her to September of 2021. And evidently there were some health issues or concerns that caused you to have her tested in the 1st of October for COVID. So what was happening?
She got what we thought was a cold, which didn't surprise us because when Grace didn't get sick very often, but when she got a cold, it seemed to be worse than normal. So we didn't think anything of it, but we were supposed to go to a wedding. And so we just thought, well, we better test her. So at that point, home tests were available. My wife went into town and got a home test, and we tested her, and she tested positive. So then, of course, we didn't go to the wedding. And we were on the frontline doctor's protocol at home. And so we were following that, and by the morning of October 6th is when we went to the urgent care. And we just couldn't keep Grace's oxygen. Her oxygen sat above 90, so that motivated us to go to the urgent care.
So you went to urgent care. You had a test conducted, and tell us what you learned and when you learned it.
So this would have been late morning on the 6th. They did a complete blood test on Grace, and one of the statistics that happens with COVID with a lot of people, Grace included, was a high D dimer, which is the propensity of our body to clot. So that sent off alarm bells such that the ER doctor recommended that we go to the emergency room to do a CT scan to see if she had blood clots. So we did that, so that we went to the emergency room at St. E's in Appleton. And fortunately, the CT scan came back negative, so she didn't have any clots. And from there, the ER doctor recommended that we admit her to the hospital because she needed oxygen, and she needed a steroid just because her body was worn down. And at that point, we just thought, you know, this is 3 to 4 days. Maybe 7 days tops, and she's going to get oxygen and steroid and come home.
Mm-hmm. But it didn't turn out that way. There was, sadly, a different turn of events. You indicated that if she was going to be hospitalized, it was imperative that you be with her.
So in the emergency room, they told me that you can't be with her, and then I instantly responded, well, then I'll be taking her home. And so then they had a meeting of the minds, and 2 hours later came back and said, we've agreed you can stay with one condition, which is you do not leave the room. And I said, well, I don't have any place to go, so that'll be no problem.
Mm-hmm. And did they also indicate that since she had tested positive that you likely would contract COVID as well?
Yeah, they told me that she was aerosoling COVID because she was on an oxygen machine, and so that I would be very likely to become COVID positive, which I was the very next day.
So they anticipated that was going to happen?
Correct.
Okay. And so even with that knowledge, they said, yes, you may go ahead and stay with your daughter.
Correct.
But you would not be able to leave.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And so you did that. And tell us about that experience in the hospital room then.
Well, we were in the emergency room for about 10 hours before a room opened up. Once we got in the room, it was approximately midnight on the 6th. So Grace was slept a lot of the next day. We watched some movies. Towards the end of the first full day in the hospital, which was, that would have been October 8th, she started to get agitated with the cannula that they were using. They're using a high-flow cannula, so that basically shoots the oxygen up your nostrils.
Mm-hmm.
She was getting frustrated with it, and so then I worked with the nurses to get her on a different way, which was a BiPAP machine. So then she got frustrated with that also because the mask was an adult mask, and Grace had sleep apnea, so I showed them the mask that she used for that, and then the respiratory therapist came in and we fit a mask for Grace, and over a period of on and off for about 4 hours that night, we wrestled through that, and ultimately Grace was content and gave me a hug and said, sorry, Dad.
But this underscored the importance of your being there.
Correct.
Here, Scott, because, I mean, you were her advocate. You knew what had been her track record of responding to medical treatment before, what she was used to, and so that input was critical for the hospital.
It was absolutely critical, and it got substantially worse as far as the need for an advocate. So the next morning, what happened was, so this would have been the morning of the 9th was Saturday, so the morning of the 8th, a doctor came in at 8 o'clock in the morning and said, you're going to have to get your daughter on a ventilator in the next 2 hours. And so I asked, what is that based on? Because she's doing fine. Mm-hmm. He said, well, it's based on the blood gas draw from yesterday. And I said, well, what time was the blood gas drawn? And he said, 11:30 p.m., and I said, you know, we just got done wrestling with Grace over a four-hour period on and off. Her blood pressure was 235 over 135. Her heart was racing at 150. I said, I don't think that's an objective measurement. Let's take another one. Mm-hmm. And so they did, and, of course, it was fine. So, I mean, if I wouldn't have done that, she would have been on a ventilator, mm-hmm. which, you know, if people do not know what a ventilator is, educate yourself. There's only a 15% chance you're going to walk out of the hospital once you're on a ventilator. And the few that do walk out, most of those die inside of a year because of the damage it does to your lungs. So you do not want to do that. So thankfully, she wasn't on a ventilator then. Then Grace and I had a good day together again, just doing the things that we would do. I mean, it was in her room. We goofed around and watched some things on her phone. And her sister Jessica was texting some funny things that happened to her. So it was a nice time. Well, then the next thing that happened was, you know, Grace started to get hungry. So she tried to tell me, but I couldn't hear her through the BiMAP. So then she signed that she's hungry. And so then I asked her, what does she want? So we could order anything. Of course, Grace wants ice cream, chocolate milk, and bacon. So that was fine. That's what I ordered her. So I started to feed her. And this was the next major event that happened.
And so she's wearing a BiPAP at this time.
She's wearing a BiPAP, mm-hmm. So I would just remove the BiPAP for a couple seconds, give her a spoon, put it back on. And a nurse, the floor nurse came running in and said, you can't do that. I said, well, what's the reason? She said, well, her oxygen saturation is only at 85, which she could see. I could see it too. They have a monitor in the room, but she could see it from the nurse's station because there was a glass window. And so then I let about half hour to an hour pass, and I tested her oxygen myself, which her oxygen tested at 95. And so we'll talk about that right after the break.
Yeah, right after the break here. We're talking with Scott Shira, father of Grace, as Grace passed away, went home to be with the Lord 12 weeks ago this very day, telling her story and the experiences that they had in the hospital. We'll be back in 1 minute.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, is any progress being made in cloning attempts?
Chris, there is a lot of work in cloning going on these days, but all is not so rosy in clone land. Often when clones are born, they exhibit diseases which normally are restricted to older specimens. For instance, Dolly the sheep, the first mammal cloned, died of old age about the same time as her mother died of old age. Recently, 4 cloned pigs all died of old age-related diseases within 6 months of being born. This should make us stop and think before cloning humans. Are we going to have elderly babies? It's not really known yet. There are a lot of good reasons not to go ahead with human cloning. This is just one of them. It's best to go back to Genesis and recognize that humans are created in the image of God and therefore deserve protection.
Visit our website at www.icr.org.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. With us in studio today is Scott Shira. He is the father of Grace Shira, Grace had tested positive for COVID October 1st and then had been recommended to go into the hospital. There was fear of blood clots taking place. And they came back negative on the clots, found that there was a need for oxygen that Grace had at that particular time. And not only oxygen, but also making sure that proper nutrition was given there. She needed something. Of course, Grace's menu of nutrition might be a little bit different than what might be the normal fare for a meal, but it was what Grace loved. And certainly at a time of physical distress, this was something that would, be a comfort to her as well.
Absolutely. That wouldn't be the normal protocol, but it fit the bill at that time.
Great.
So just to finish up then, before break, we were talking about the oxygen set. So my oxygen set meter showed she was at 95, so I asked the nurse, what's the reason that my meter shows 95 but yours is at 85? And she said, well, the leads on their measurement device get sweaty. And so I said, if that's known, this is a primary statistic you're using to measure what to do with my daughter. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you just change these leads out every 4 hours or whatever is necessary so that we don't run into this problem? And she surprisingly said, you should be thankful that this was found.
My.
It's hard to believe.
Yeah. So the deficiency of the hospital equipment, and you point this out, and yet you were chastised, really, for bringing this forth. As it relates to this issue, so much depends upon what those oxygen levels are. What is the future treatment going to happen because of the low oxygen? And so if that's reading low, that's going to give a different course of action than proper oxygen levels.
And this wasn't the only time. This happened multiple times. So my daughter Jessica took over for me as an advocate. She experienced the same thing.
Yeah. Let's talk about that transition that took place because you were there. You were told you're not going to be able to leave. And I understand you actually did contract COVID while in the hospital.
Correct. I tested positive on October 7th. So Grace checked in about midnight on the 6th and about 1 o'clock in the afternoon on the 7th. I had a kit in the hospital room with me, and I felt like I wasn't quite right. So I tested myself, and I was positive.
Mm-hmm. There came a time, though, in which you were told it's time you must leave the hospital. What happened?
7 o'clock on Sunday morning, the 10th. The head nurse, along with an armed guard, came in the room, and she told me you need to leave immediately. And I said, what's the reason? She said, well, you've been shutting off the alarms, which I said that's because I asked the nurses to train me how to shut them off because they're going off constantly throughout the night, and mm-hmm. sometimes it takes up to 30 minutes for them to come in. And then she said the last three shifts of nurses said that they didn't want to work with you. And so.
Is this because you advocated on her behalf?
Correct. Right. I mean, I stood up for what needed to be, what happened mm-hmm. in that room. But, of course, they didn't want any part of that. I'm just a dumb dad. Right. But, I mean, I could see the obvious, but they didn't want any input whatsoever.
Yeah. So an armed guard actually escorted you out of the room?
Correct. He actually walked me all the way to the truck. And, you know, I went back and forth with that nurse for about an hour. This is unfortunately in front of Grace. You know, she was not kind. Anyway, when he walked me out to the truck, you know, he had heard what I told her, and he said to me, "You need to take this higher up."
Hmm.
He knew what the real deal was.
So, Grace for the first time is left by herself.
Correct.
You advocated, though, continued to advocate to get somebody else there to be her patient advocate there in the hospital.
Thankfully, our special needs attorney was available on a Sunday, so I talked with her, and she encouraged me to get a hold of patient relations first thing Monday morning, which I did. It took them until about 1 o'clock in the afternoon to get back with me, even though I called three times. And then she asked for... The patient relations person asked for our attorney's contact information, and then our special needs attorney and the hospital attorney had a meeting of the minds that Jessica could come in and be an advocate. So I had basically Jessica was on standby ready to go. So as soon as they approved it, Jessica got there. So she was there within 15 minutes. So she ended up being there from 2 to 7 then on Monday. Even though she was allowed to stay overnight, that hadn't been communicated to the floor staff, so they wouldn't allow her to stay overnight. Mm-hmm. So then they wouldn't allow her to come back until 11 o'clock the following day, which was Tuesday, and then she stayed overnight Tuesday night.
So Jessica then was able to stay in communication with you as to what was taking place?
Yes.
Okay. And what she discovered there, though, was also very troubling to her at the time. Let's talk about Jessica and some of the things that she started seeing that she alerted you to.
Well, she had the same type of experience that we had, or that I had, relative to the oxygen levels and the challenges with the staff. But what happened was it really became alarming at the end. And I'd like to just drill that down and read Jessica's notes. So Jessica and I both wrote letters because we wanted to have a meeting with the hospital. And I'm going to just read this right out of Jessica's note from her letter. So Jessica wrote, she still just felt so cold and something didn't seem right. So I checked for a pulse again and couldn't find one. I lifted Grace's eyelid up and her eyes rolled back. I checked her numbers on the screen and everything was dropping. I ran to get someone to help and no one would help. Holly told me,
who is
Holly was one of the nurses.
Okay.
Holly told me they did everything they could for my sister. I FaceTimed my parents, and I was thinking this might be the end. I showed them Grace and showed them her numbers. They told me to get somebody in there, the doctor, anyone. I told them I tried and went back and out and tried again. This time we were all screaming for help, my parents on FaceTime and me in person. No one would help. We were yelling to reverse what they did. Help her. The nurses were all saying, she's a DNR. I have my parents right there on FaceTime yelling, she's not DNR, she's not DNR. Help her, please. Help our little girl. My dad yelled, she is not a DNR in this situation when you gave her something to cause this. My mom yelled, are you not helping our little girl because she has Downs? Absolutely no one would help. One nurse read off the computer, stated that the doctor labeled her as a DNR, and they claimed they couldn't do anything about it. They wouldn't even reverse the morphine effect or anything. There was probably 30 to 40 nurses standing in the hallway that did absolutely nothing. There's a reason there's so many, is that was the time of shift change. Holly was nowhere to be found, and there was an armed guard outside of Grace's room. Why would there be an armed guard? That's what Jessica wrote.
Okay, we've got a lot to break down here, Scott, and I know it's painful for you to relive all these things that are going on, but first of all, let's talk about the medications themselves, because you mentioned she's on medications, and this triggered what Grace started experiencing. So we're going to talk about these medications, and then we're going to be talking about this DNR order that was out there. But let's begin with the medications. What medications was she given, and what was the basis for giving her these medications?
Well, she was on a medication called Presidex. So Presidex, I didn't know it was called that at the time, but when we were having trouble that first day with Grace with the high flow cannula, I approved them using a sedation drug as a temporary just to calm things down. Mm-hmm. At that point, you know, my assumption was, I mean, Grace didn't need to be sedated. There's no reason for it. And so they did stop the Presidex the next day.
And it was just to take the edge off.
It was just take the edge off. Well, then they put her back on it. And so there's what's called a package insert for every medicine a hospital uses. And essentially those are the rules they're supposed to follow. So one of the, right on the front page of the package insert for Presidex, it says adverse reactions associated with infusions greater than 24 hours in duration include ARDS, respiratory failure, and agitation. So that's a known side effect. Mm-hmm. So now Grace was on Presidex now for the next 5 days in a row. So now what I did in preparation for my time on Newsmax was to put together a timeline of the last day. So Grace was on a 0.1 unit dosage of Presidex when I had approved it for that, taking the edge off. on her last day at 10:48 in the morning, so this is on October 13th, they had ratcheted the Prexidex up to 14 times that original dosage, and then they kept her on that until 6:37 that evening. These times are really important. So she died at 7:27. At 6:37, they stopped the Prexidex. At 5:46, they added lorazepam to the mix because she was being agitated. Remember, a side effect of Prexidex is agitation. And Prexidex is not a drug that you would, it's an anesthesia drug. It's something that you use for putting people to sleep for surgery, and you just would not do this to somebody, but they kept her on this. Then they add two doses of lorazepam, 5:46 and 5:49, and that's 3 minutes apart. Then they delivered a 2-milligram dose of morphine as an IV push at 6:15. So now she's got all three of these drugs in her system from 5:46 to 6:15. And when these drugs have what's called a cumulative effect. So each drug standing on its own is a potential issue, but they're cumulative. So you and I couldn't have survived this cumulative effect of these drugs.
So this was, from what your research shows, very out of the ordinary to give this combination of drugs if you're really trying to sustain somebody's life.
Well, it's not just my opinion. The doctor that we've been working with to help us make some sense out of this and understand the records, what she said specifically is that what they did is beyond believable as to intention. That's the doctor who's helping us where it's not ours.
We're talking with Scott Shura here today on Crosstalk. Scott Shura, and talking about her daughter Grace, who went into the hospital with COVID, and what you initially had given the okay for that Prexidex to be given her, just to cut the edge off. Who authorized then the other drugs to be given her, the morphine and the Prexidex?
The Prexidex would have been from the hospitalist that was on that floor. At the end, the hospitalist changed on October 11th. The one went on vacation, a new one came on. So each time, the hospitalist is the one that made the decision to use these drugs. You know, Cindy, in power of attorney language, you only can have one power of attorney. So Cindy was first, my wife, I was second, Jessica was third. At no time was I as an advocate, Jessica as an advocate, or Cindy as a power of attorney ever asked or walked through any of these things. They made all these decisions on their own.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about this DNR that was given, the Do Not Resuscitate order that was given out. Where did that originate, and why was the response happening the way it was? So we'll come back in a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk here on VCY America.
Imagine if you could change society's stance on abortion.
How do you feel about the issue of abortion?
I think in some situations it can be necessary.
So have you just changed your mind about abortion?
Yeah.
Would you have a vote for someone who was for the killing of children in the womb?
No.
I believe in someone's right to choose.
Are you going to change your stance on it?
Yeah, it's definitely making me think, yeah.
What was the compelling question to change people's minds on abortion? From Ray Comfort comes the DVD 180, featuring street interviews in which people who were pro-abortion changed 180 degrees to pro-life.
So have you just changed your mind about abortion?
Yeah.
180 is available for a donation to VCY of just $5, 5 copies for a donation of $18, or 10 copies for a donation of $25. Call 1-800-729-9829. Ask for the DVD 180.
The This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Our program title today is simply Grace. Grace, who is the daughter of Scott Shera, and sharing her story today again, was put into the hospital with COVID, and the protocols that were being followed were ones that the testimony here today is that this is something that brought about her death. And I understand something that's very troubling to me, Scott, that if I could have you explain, Grace was given a DNR, a do not resuscitate order. Did this come from you?
It did not come from us.
From your wife?
Not
I mean,
from
she,
my wife.
She had power of attorney from Jessica, your daughter, who was her patient advocate at that time?
The first time we knew that Grace was labeled DNR was when the nurses screamed back to us in Grace's final minutes that she's DNR. That's the first time we knew.
Who issued the order?
The hospitalist that was on during the last 3 days of Grace's life.
Was there ever a discussion about DNR with between the hospitalist and yourself or your wife who had power of attorney?
There was never a discussion about DNR. There was a discussion about DNI, which is do not intubate, because he wanted a decision. So just the backdrop, I said earlier about the doctor who wanted to put Grace on a ventilator. So do not intubate means no ventilator. And so 4 different times after that initial event, they wanted us to make a decision for a ventilator, not because Grace needed it, but they wanted to have that. In their words, these type of things tend to happen in the middle of the night when we can't get a hold of anyone, meaning the need for a ventilator. So they wanted it on file that we would approve a ventilator in the case where it was necessary.
And every one of these 4 times you said no.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So the last time, so the evening of the 12th, so the day before Grace died, he called and walked us through that again and wanted a decision. Then he called at 8 o'clock in the morning on the 13th asking our decision. And we again told him no relative to a ventilator. And he took that conversation, which I've transcribed his notes just so I can read them right out of his report, that there's no reference to DNR whatsoever. But that's what the hospital uses as their excuse for the DNR order.
So let's talk about Grace's last day. Again, 12 weeks ago, this very day here today, October 13th, 2021. Early in the morning, you actually had some encouragement regarding Grace.
Yeah, he called in the same discussion that we were talking about, do not intubate. He had said that, you know, Grace was doing well. I think we should really start focusing on nutrition. Grace had a central line already, so we could have used TPN nutrition, but he really wanted her to have a feeding tube because that would give better nutrition without the risk of an infection. And so we foolishly approved the feeding tube based on that recommendation.
That agitated Grace as well?
Right, so that agitated her more, which then, you know, then you start seeing this these meds and you realize, okay, I mean, why would we, you know, why would we do this to agitate her? It didn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. So she was agitated from the feeding tube, and so hence we see the application then of the Predasex,
Presidex,
thank you, and then also the lorazepam.
Correct.
Through the course of the day. So no DNR was issued by you. I'm confident you stated to the nurses that there is no DNR.
Correct.
And yet there was no action taken on their part.
There was no action at all. What's strange is my wife looked up the DNR rules, and the hospital didn't follow any of them. A DNR is supposed to be something that's signed. Grace was DNR, she's supposed to have a bracelet on. Then in the event that she was DNR, we can override the DNR just by verbally saying that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and so, I mean, it's pretty obvious. You can connect the dots. I mean, we have our, you know, they'll remain theories because we can't prove this stuff, but you just start looking at it and you make the connection as to what was really going on here.
I'm looking at your timeline here, Scott, and I'm seeing that 45 minutes before Grace passed, that the doctor said Grace had a good day.
Correct. He called us at 6:45. Grace died at 6:27 p.m. He called at
7:27.
Yeah, I'm sorry, 7:27. Thank you. And then he called. I mean, he called us, said that she had a good day. I mean, it's a strange sequence of events when you start laying it out on paper.
So, Jessica, your daughter is there at the hospital at the time, and she's seeing all these numbers go down. There's FaceTime with you. She is trying to get medical personnel there to do something. They're saying, no, she's got DNR. We can't do anything. You're on FaceTime saying, we haven't approved DNR. Help her, help her, help her. What happens at that point?
They simply would not. They would not do anything. They just yelled back, she's DNR. They would not lift a finger to help whatsoever. They just watched our beautiful daughter die on FaceTime.
And she died just minutes then after the situation.
Just minutes, right. Mm-hmm. Minutes afterward. If you add to this, I mean, in the medical profession, there's people that know what's going on. There's a number of people who are evil, but there's people that also know what's going on. And one of them shared with my wife. So this is, I'm just going to read this out of Jessica's summary. She wrote, my mom shared with me that there was a nurse that helped get Grace's belongings to my parents' vehicle. So right after Grace died, I had COVID. So I drove Cindy to the hospital. I couldn't go in. I just had to sit in the truck, but Cindy went to Grace's room and with Jessica and our pastor. Anyway, back to what Jessica wrote. This nurse said that she helped with Grace a few times. She didn't look familiar to me and was not the nurse who FaceTimed me on Sunday. This nurse informed my mom that her and several of the other nurses didn't believe Grace should have died. That tells you that something truly happened behind those walls. And of course, we didn't put the nurses' names in these because we don't want them to have retribution.
Well, again, Scott, condolences we pass on to you, a very painful time that you're reliving even right now and will for some time to come. You've had the service and memorial service, et cetera, for Grace. And in the aftermath, you have actually contacted the hospital once again.
Correct. So Jessica and I wrote summaries. We did a lot of research with the help of the doctor friend of ours. And on November 8th, I asked the patient relations person to if she would help schedule a meeting with the hospital CEO and the doctor hospitalist. And on December 2nd, I received an email back that they were not going to meet with us, but they would send a letter instead.
They wouldn't even meet with you?
Correct.
They wouldn't even hear your concerns? They would not see you face-to-face?
Correct.
So they said they would respond by way of letter, and I believe it was a letter that was dated December 15th, but you received sometime later.
We received it on Christmas Eve.
December 24th, 2021.
Correct.
And what did that letter state? I mean, can't go through all the details,
sure.
But in essence, what were they telling you?
Virtually at every concern that I brought up, they denied. Which, of course, I somewhat have expected that, but it's painful reading these denials because it's not just denials. There's outright lies in a number of situations.
Mm-hmm. And at that point, it seems like it's all over and done as far as the hospital is concerned.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. You have done a lot of research through this process, and there was even some conclusions that you've drawn in your own mind pertaining to this, but you indicate that through your research, you have found that there's monetary gain to a hospital that follows a set of protocols. What did you learn?
Well, the most surprising thing to us, my wife had suspected this. She said, before I went on Newsmax, she said, Grace was worth more to the hospital dead than alive. Well, that gave me the incentive to find out what actually was invoiced by the hospital and what did they receive. And this is shocking. So the hospital invoiced for Grace's care. She was in the hospital 1 week. They invoiced $64,127. They received $11,764.
It's Medicare?
She's on Medicaid.
Medicaid.
Right. So that's all they received for a week. By labeling her death COVID, they received $13,000. So, in fact, she was worth more dead than alive. Mm-hmm. She was on, you've had Elizabeth leave the lead time before, and she's discussed allocation of care. And this is, in our opinion, this is one of those examples. It's real life. I mean, you have a disabled person on Medicaid. This is, again, this is our opinion. I mean, this is exactly the type of person that the government wants out, and the hospital does too. They're not making any money off of her.
That's really what you're feeling in your heart of hearts?
Correct.
That this was a financial decision?
I believe it was a financial, absolutely, I think it was a financial decision.
Mm-hmm.
You can't make any sense out of it otherwise. How can Grace be Tuesday night? So Grace died on Wednesday. Tuesday night, she's on FaceTime with Jessica with our two grandkids, and she's hollering at them, "Hi, boys." You know, she just, it doesn't make any sense. How can she be dead the next day?
Yeah.
And then you look at that series of meds. I mean, 2 + 2 = 4 where I'm from.
Mm-hmm.
And it,
yeah, matter of fact, you've got the timeline of meds that were given, and first of all, at midnight, and then just intensifying there through the course of the day. And then when you combine the three of those together, brought about what you strongly believe hastened her death, even toward what another doctor has told you, that these drugs working together are going to have that outcome.
Well, even not just the other doctor, there's the package insert for morphine has what's called a black box label. A black box label, for those of you who do not understand, is these are a big deal. And the black box label for morphine says specifically that if you combine morphine with a benzo, which is lorazepam, and a CNS depressant, which is Presidex, that it may result in death. And on the warning label on the same page, it says they're supposed to have the reversal drug available immediately because this is a known problem. And so, I mean, the nurses could have come in when we said she's not DNR and give her the reversal drug, but so they would not do it.
A reversal drug was available, and the directions even say to have one nearby, but it was not available.
That's all we can discern out of it. They didn't give it to her, and they wouldn't come in the room.
We're going to take a quick break, and what is a takeaway from all of this here, and why is Scott sharing this story? We'll be getting into those aspects here in our final segment. You're listening to Crosstalk here on the VCY American Network. Scott Scherer, our guest, father of Grace. Back in a minute.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. The death rate for those aged 18 to 64 has risen to historic levels of 40% over pre-pandemic levels. This is according to the CEO of the Indianapolis-based insurance company, One America. He said, quote, "We're seeing right now the highest death rates we have seen in the history of this business, not just at One America," said Scott Davison, head of the $100 billion insurance company. He said this company of theirs has been around since 1877. He said this is huge. This is a real problem. The question is, what is causing this 40% increase in the death rates among 18 to 64-year-olds? Could it be the COVID shot, this experimental RNA gene therapy? You decide. But the evidence is coming in. I'm Brandon House.
program today is called Grace. With us is Grace's father, Scott Shera, and talking about the death of his daughter 12 weeks ago today. 19-year-old, Down syndrome, had tested positive for COVID, was hospitalized and treated following the the very protocols that are being carried out in facilities across the nation. Certainly was one who had been agitated when the feeding tube was put in. And one of the drugs that was given your daughter, Scott, was morphine. Why did they give the morphine?
So when the doctor called us at 6:45 that evening, he had said he had just administered morphine and said the reason was that Grace was breathing at 51 breaths a minute. So at this point, remember, we had no, the timeline wasn't created. We had no records. So we just blindly trusted the white coat. So we thought, okay, if that's what's necessary, that's what's necessary. But they had actually caused the 51 breaths per minute because of ratcheting up the Precedex and the lorazepam. It was, so to fix that with morphine, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Okay, so the problem was caused internally by these drugs and then giving the morphine to deal with it, and that was a very deadly mix for Grace.
That's correct.
Wow. Scott, tell us why you're telling the story. You've shared it in a few locations. You mentioned Newsmax. You've been on other Christian radio as well. Why are you going out? What is it you're wanting to be told to people here across the nation?
Oh, that's a great question. First of all, we felt that we couldn't share the story until we gave the hospital a chance to meet with us. And when they chose to not do that, we thought we had at least the green light to share it. And we felt we wanted to share it because we don't want Grace's death to be in vain. I would believe that if people know what happens in the hospital, that most people would not go. There's so many alternative treatments available. There's almost never do you need to go to the hospital with COVID. So if people know what happens, we have a chance through this story to save lives.
And we've seen through interviews we've done, like with Dr. Valit and Dr. McAuliffe, that they've talked about some of those alternatives that are available in this case. You also, and very troubling, because your research not only found about the payout to the hospital for the COVID death, but also for use of a ventilator, for use of ICU facilities and so forth.
Correct. The numbers are staggering with respect to the payouts. So I mentioned before that the hospital gets $13,000 for a COVID death, but if they get a patient or their advocate to agree to a ventilator, they get $39,000 for the installation, and then approximately $235,000 for the care related to the ventilator, because the average length of time somebody stays alive on a ventilator is 21 days. So you add the ICU charge and all the charges together for that, and it's another $235,000. So you can understand why they're pushing for a ventilator. Financially, you can understand. You can't understand it heart-wise, but you can understand it financially.
And who's calling the shots on this?
Well, this is a strange thing. Dr. Peter McAuliffe had said that, and he's right. There's no research arm of this virus. So the government's calling the shots. The hospitals are following suit, and they're, I would presume, more profitable than they ever have. So a friend of mine called after the last interview, and he said, doesn't it seem strange that they're paying bonuses on death? Shouldn't they be paying bonuses based on how people survive? Mm-hmm. Then you'd have a research component of this situation.
There's something else, Scott, that you shared with me in some of the research you sent me in advance, and indicate that out of 195 countries, that the United States is number 19 in death per capita. Do you believe that's linked to the protocols we're taking?
It's partially. It's linked to a number of things. It's linked to the hospital is literally killing people, as we saw with Grace. So that's one aspect of it. The financial piece is another aspect. So, they have they have a financial benefit for doing things that don't help people. Then, of course, there's the piece of the puzzle where people aren't aware that they can treat COVID without going to the hospital. And then everybody's heard of these crazy deaths that are labeled COVID when COVID had nothing to do with the death.
I know there are listeners to this program that are also in the healthcare profession, doctors and nurses and so forth, and say, wait a second, we're doing everything we can to help these individuals get better. What do you say to them?
I think there are some that do. I went to St. Vincent's Hospital in Green Bay, and they did that. But just process this. If for 2 years you've had the COVID patients come to your hospital, you're following the same protocol for 2 years, and you get the same results, wouldn't you change? I mean, why would you keep up with results that are killing people? I mean, you would, just by our nature, you don't want to be insane. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results.
What lies ahead now for you, your wife, daughter Jessica?
Well, after we're done getting this message out, we believe that we will be starting a private charitable foundation to share Grace's story, but more importantly, then the story is sharing her light. So she was a light for the Lord, and we want to keep that going. We had virtually all of our estate going to Grace, and she's not here anymore. Hmm. So we want to be able to use that money and donations that would come in to do some neat things for kids that may not have had the neat experiences that Grace had.
We've got just half a minute left. What would you like to leave with our listeners, Scott?
Well, what I'd like to leave is that God is sovereign. So even though we miss Grace, we know that He has a bigger plan. And some days it's hard to submit to that plan, but I'm confident that He's sovereign and that He knew the way Grace was going to die, the day she was going to die. He knew all of that before she was born. So we can rest in that and move on beyond this because of that fact.
Scott, thank you for coming in today and reliving this story, but also sharing this both as a testimonial as well as a warning here to our listeners as well. Thank you for doing so.
Thanks for having me.
And friends, God bless you. Thank you for listening and joining us here on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Take Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.